Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. Shortly we'll hear from the British and Irish Lions head coach Warren Gatland, as well as the Telegraph rugby writer Mick Cleary, who shares his views on the Lions coaching ticket and those Anglo-Irish European Champions Cup games that take place this weekend. But first, the news that rocked Irish rugby this week. Connacht head coach Pat Lam confirming that he was leaving at the end of the season to join relegation favourites Bristol, where he takes over as their head coach from the start of the season. The news was greeted with shock and disbelief. Lam fronted a media conference in Galway on Wednesday.
When I went down to Killaloe to see my good friend Axel at his removal, and I saw Olive and I saw the two kids, when I left there, and again Axel is in that same environment that we all are as head coaches and the challenges of that. But when I saw him there and then found out what happened, and it was so close because we were in the same situation, I could picture everything because I'm in that situation myself. I'm the second Pat Lam on this earth. The first one, I was named after my grandfather. He died when I was 9 with a heart attack at 55. Last week, my father, through this whole process, I shouldn't have been here, but thanks to technology, he was going through a quadruple bypass. I have heart issues anyway. But what it did for me is when I left Killaloe driving home with Willie and Tim, all I could think about was if that was me, what would happen to Steph and the kids? Before I arrived there, I was a sack coach, 7 months, no job, 5 kids and a wife. The year after, we had one of the most successful times in the Blues and everything was good, but it quickly turned, and as already out there, me and my family were the only ones who faced the racial abuse, my daughter answering the phone, my 4-year-old daughter answering the door to a camera like this, media. No one goes through that, that's just me. But that's the choice that I make, all right? But what it does mean that every November, without fail since I've been here, I get asked to other clubs would like to talk, right, and go through, and discussions start before that period of time. But what happened was obviously Bristol was one of a few that spoke to me. But my whole process, when I have any offer put to me on the table or any discussion, I look at my rugby career, because I'm responsible for my family to put food on the table. So it's the career, rugby, what's the right choice, and all of the things I've just spoken to you go into it, but then my family come into it.
That's Pat Lam there. Wednesday was also the day when the British and Irish Lions head coach Warren Gatland confirmed his assistant coaches for next year's tour to New Zealand. Rob Howley looks after attack, Steve Borthwick lineouts and the breakdown, and Andy Farrell will once again be in charge of defence.
It's great to be here again 4 years on from where it was. We were in Ireland at Carlton House now, which is great because it's just up the road from us who live in Dublin. But 4 years ago we was in Scotland and it was snowing, it was freezing. That was an exciting time. It's my first time as a Lions member. I think this is even more exciting because I've witnessed what it's like to be involved in the Lions setup. And 4 years ago, it was pretty special, not just because of the result at all, really. It's just the camaraderie of what the Lions is about and the spirit of what the Lions is about. And it's everything that I thought it would be. And it's great to be involved again.
There's no doubt that you have seen it firsthand, you know, even with Ireland in the last month, what is expected for to try and keep New Zealand and the New Zealand mentality at bay.
Yeah, no, we've had two goes of it over the autumn, and we knew it was going to be tough beforehand, and it didn't disappoint, did it? You know, I'm still of the same opinion. It's going to be very, very tough, and you know, you look at the two experiences. They were fantastic. You know, to play the best in the world, especially in Chicago, was a fantastic week, and great memories there. And to back that up 2 weeks later when they was hurting a little bit, and to see how they reacted to that was great challenge for us as well. And and then you know what's on the horizon next summer, and you know how special it's going to be for us, but how special is it going to be for them as well, you know? And they're going to be even better than they have been over the last couple of years, so that's going to be a step up for everyone.
And does it really reinforce the mental challenge there is, you know, given the fact that, you know, New Zealand aren't used to losing? They may lose one game, but, you know, in terms of a test series, it's a whole different idea, sort of between your two ears, if you understand what I mean, when you're playing them.
Yeah, they haven't lost too much in their history twice, have they, on the trot? But this is a three-match game series, and you always like to get off to a good start, but if you don't, then it's do or die, isn't it, for the second one? There's all sorts of emotions that go on within a three-game series, and there's all sorts of different changing personnel and tactics that happen within a Lions tour as well. So there'll be all sorts of twists and turns, and that's why the tours are pretty special.
And in terms of the player that's required, the quality of the player that's required, you know, given the fact that you have to do a lot of travel, you pack, you unpack your bag, you play a match, you pack, you move on. Yeah. There are sort of off-field pressures, if you understand what I mean, to this tour as well.
That's the challenge of a Lions tour. That's why it's different to every other tour, because you know, old-fashioned tours back in the day, they could have gone on for 5 or 6 weeks, you know, like the Lions tour is. But like if Ireland went away, that team would have been together for the full year, and then off they go on the end of the season tour. But this is four nations coming together that haven't played together before, won't have played a warm-up match, and you've got a group of players that are desperate to get into that starting squad for the first test, and there's 5 or 6 games before that, and there's going to be, as you said, plenty of travelling and plenty of community stuff, etc., embracing the New Zealand culture, etc. That's part of being a Lion, dealing with all that, and not just taking it on, but embracing it, enjoying it, and going with it.
So that's the people on the pitch, but what about the people off the pitch with the coaching staff? Yeah, there's continuity there from before, but, you know, when you see younger, with apologies to you, younger fellas like Steve Borthwick and that coming in, I mean, it's important everybody gels there together as well.
How much younger is Steve than me?
He's 37.
Yeah. Continuity is good, because as a coaching staff, you can get on the same page that little bit quicker when we remind each other what we're about. But freshness is great as well, and not just in the coaching staff, but within the management, you know, because it really just isn't about the coaches and the players. It's about all the backroom staff moving to helping one another, helping the kit man move his stuff, and helping us get sorted to make sure that we get somewhere on time, etc. And everyone really does muck in, and, you know, everyone thinks that you're coaching silos, and, you know, I'll be in charge of one area and Gats in another, etc. But you really have got to muck in, you know, because you've got a side that are playing at 7:30 at night, but you've got another side that needs training because they're playing in 3 days' time as well. So everyone's got to be a whole hands on deck, and that's the great thing about these Lions tour.
A final question, or promises to be a rather interesting 2 or 3 months ahead, including obviously the Six Nations Championship for, you know, squad selection and making final decisions as to who goes.
Well, look, after the autumn that we've just seen, it's pretty exciting, isn't it? Everyone's talking about the Six Nations the week after the autumn series is wrapped up, which is pretty exciting, you know. And with the four nations playing extremely well, it looks like it's going to be a fiercely competitive Six Nations. Everyone's predicting like everyone always does, but there's all sorts of twists and turns that happen within the Six Nations, and we know with our Irish hats on that we've got a very tough start to the campaign at Murrayfield, Scotland away. We're playing extremely well. We've got to prepare as best we can for that, and we'll do our homework on the Scottish players and make sure that we're cohesive and try and hit the ground running. Then we'll concentrate on Italy after that. And as we move through the competition, us as coaches within the Lions setup will come up against each other, and so will the players, etc. And there's no doubt about it, there'll be a few headaches on this first selection at the end of it.
That's Andy Farrell, the Lions defence coach. Well, the head coach, Warren Gatland, also confirmed that he will add some specialist coaches over the course of the coming months. He's also encouraged by the form of the Northern Hemisphere teams this autumn.
Yeah, there's some continuity there in terms of and a couple of guys that I worked with before. Yeah, I mean, the ideal scenario would have been to have someone representing in the four nations. At the moment, we've got three represented with England, you know, Wales and Ireland. And having worked with Rob and Andy in the past, the challenge for us is just the preparation time. So you're trying to short circuit a little bit and sort of cut down things. So, you know, a couple of guys, we know each other pretty well. And the expectation, having worked with each other in 2013, and then bringing in a fresh voice, someone new, and obviously has done a good job with initially with Japan and now with England with Steve and his experience. So look, it's it's pretty exciting. But I want to add two more faces. Hopefully in the next few weeks, people I've kind of identified, and hopefully we can get them across the line as well.
How difficult a challenge is it going to be, given the fact of the nature of the tour, a game at the weekend? You travel the following day. You're almost trying to, I don't want to say run two squads simultaneously, but you know, there's a set group of players, and you've only one group of coaches, if you understand.
Yeah, I mean, that's a challenge, and that's why we're probably looking at another attack coach. You know, so sometimes, you know, you've got a captain's run that day, so you're working with that, and then in the afternoon or after a captain's run, you might say to one of the other coaches, you know, you take those 15 or 17 guys for a training session. Because what I found in 2013, it was just relentless for the coaches. You're just doubling up all the time and stuff. And you need to keep them mentally fresh and just give them a bit of a break and a little bit of time off and try and get a day off as well. And just to hope, you know, because, you know, that can be a long and tiring tour for the coaches as well. So, look, that's going to be the challenge from that point of view in terms of the coaching and the structure and that. And putting that all together and the time. I mean, I think we've got a couple of camps planned, one here in Ireland, one in Wales, for about 4 days, and that'll probably be, you know, I would say maybe half the squad, maybe a little bit more. So those 2 4-day camps, you're probably looking at most of those guys preparing for the first game, and then you've got the guys involved in the Pro 12 final and the Viva Premiership who sort of come in either that night or the next day, and then you've got a farewell dinner, fly to New Zealand and arrive there on the Wednesday. That first game's on the Saturday, so maybe that first game on the Saturday is the guys you've been working with, and then you're trying to get the other guys pretty much up to speed as quickly as you possibly can, getting them ready for the game against the Blues on the following Wednesday. I think the games are brilliant. You know, the challenge for us is to try and put everything together. And I think one of the things that we found in 2013 was that, you know, sort of said to the players, if you're fit, everyone will get a start in the first three games. So if I'm a player going on the line tour, I think, if I know I'm going to start, I feel like I've been in the shop window, at least I've had a chance, you know. And I felt that, sometimes a little bit tough on the preparation, but I felt that worked really well in 2013, because having spoken to a lot of people and looked at Lions tours from the past, you know, the message is, if we can get things right off the field, and we can get a happy, harmonious squad, then we've got a good chance of performing and getting things right on the field. So, you know, a lot of things to do and some pretty challenging stuff. How tough the games are, I think, is absolutely brilliant. I think people said, it's a tough tour, you know, you're going to New Zealand playing Super Rugby size of Maoris and three tests here. But I think as long as we don't pick up too many injuries, I think that how tough the tour is brilliant, because having been involved in South Africa in 2009 and again in Australia in 2000, we two or three games where they were too easy, you know, winning by 50 or 60 points. That's not great preparation. So playing those sides and having really tough encounters and being battle hardened for, you know, preparing for test matches is absolutely ideal.
And your impressions of New Zealand? I mean, you saw them close hand. You saw them when they played Ireland twice in Chicago and in Dublin.
Yeah, I think the thing for New Zealand, I mean, they lost a couple of key players, and by losing a couple of those key players, there was almost like a couple of cracks, you know, with Whitelock and Retallick in particular. And if you look in the past, I mean, the All Blacks used to come over and they'd put out their number one side against England and France, and they could make 10 or 12 changes against Ireland, Wales and Scotland and Stillwin comfortably. And they don't do that anymore, you know, they put out pretty strong. And I think that's a credit to the Celtic Nations in terms of them improving. But they're a quality. I look on that game in Chicago and think, what a fantastic result and some great performances. And Ireland, you know, up at, 25-8 at half-time, you think, oh, they're going to win this game comfortably, and all of a sudden the All Blacks just come back, and you think, oh, my God, they're going to do it again, they're going to be in front. And in fairness to Ireland, they scored at a crucial moment, the Henshaw try from that scrum, and then, you know, the All Blacks, like anyone, they showed a bit of frailty and they come under some pressure and started, a couple of passes went to the ground, made a couple of mistakes and that. And just like everything, everyone put under enough pressure can be vulnerable. And they would have taken a lot of external criticism and criticising themselves internally. And then, they've turned up in Dublin and their whole focus hasn't been about performances, it's been about the result. And I know a lot's been made of, the game and, whether they, some of the off, some of the tactics, were they illegal, were they over the top. I watched the game. I didn't feel like that at the time. I think the Fikitoa one, and people say that maybe that should have been a red card, and you can understand. But I didn't kind of feel. I know it was a physical game. I didn't feel like the All Blacks had come with the attitude of trying to be dirty and trying to intimidate. There was just one or two incidents. I think people made a lot of that, and I know both the coaches went too happy with the referee, and they felt a couple of decisions went against them. But again, I thought Ireland, in fairness, a lot of territory, a lot of possession, played pretty well. But just shows what a quality side that All Black team is, after being reasonably well beaten in Chicago, and they've just turned up and the whole focus has been to shut Ireland down, and now they didn't allow them to score a try. But I still thought there was a lot of positives about Ireland's performance, particularly losing a couple of key players and making a few changes in terms of personnel, and I thought they were strong up front. So, I think we can take some positives out of, definitely some positives out of the way that Ireland have performed, but also positives out of the, a lot of the games in the autumn. I think it's the best that I can ever remember the Northern Hemisphere teams doing against the Southern Hemisphere teams in the autumn campaigns. And so, we can take some real belief, and hopefully that can continue over the next number of months and build in towards that tour of New Zealand.
The last time that we had a conversation about selecting a squad, it was literally after you had selected your squad and you spoke about how difficult it was, maybe to fill those last five, six, seven places within, the touring party that went to Australia. It appears, even the way the autumn has gone, your job is even going to be more difficult this time around.
Yeah, I think, look, at the moment there's a lot of people that have made an impression, and for everyone now, it's about the Six Nations and that's because that's our bread and butter, that's our competition now. And you look back 2000, pretty mouthwatering that potentially that last game Ireland and England, I think a lot at stake. And you look back 4 years ago when England and Wales played that last game, and it pretty much came down to a trial for a number of players, and that was a comprehensive win for Ireland and over England that day, and it would probably tip the balance in terms of the selection for a number of players, and that it could very well happen in the last round of the Six Nations this time. And I think a lot of players are pretty aware of, how important. I got asked, I said about the autumn, there's an opportunity for players to put a big tick next to name, and one of the other journalists had asked me, who's impressed you, particularly in Chicago. And I said, well, two guys have really impressed me in Chicago, and it wasn't just impressed a lot of people were Conor Murray and Robbie Henshaw. And so, at the moment, both of them have done really well, but I said I've probably done them a disservice because, for the Six Nations, because if I was playing against Robbie or Conor Murray, you think to myself, if I go out there and outperform them and play better than them, then, so I've probably put those two guys under a little bit of pressure at the moment. But, you get asked in terms of, there's a lot of players that have done really well. I think it's great from my point of view, the performance in the last 12 months of England and the confidence. I mean, England should always be in the top two or three teams in the world. They're given the strength and depth, and they'll be knocking on the door, and the fact that they've done so well, I think it's great from a Lions perspective. Mm-hmm. And the other nations can continue to show the improvement they've done. We've seen some improvement in Scotland, which has been great. Obviously Ireland have continued to do pretty well, and there's some I think they've a couple of players that have really developed over the last few months as well, some younger players, and a couple of props that they've done a good job for them. Rory Best playing pretty well as well, and seemed to have grown into the captaincy. And so there's lots of positives in that. And Wales, they will know. And there's a lot of players there who probably think there's better performances in them, even though to best they've done for 12 or 13 years in the autumn in terms of winning three out of the four games. And they would feel a good Six Nations for them, and a lot of players are going to get some recognition as well. So I'm sitting back and as almost the neutral at the moment, thinking, I'm really excited about the Six Nations, thinking, geez, this is going to be one hell of a competition. All roads lead to Dublin, I suppose, for that last weekend potentially. A lot at stake, and the other nations will be going, you know, actually, you know, we want to put ourselves in the contention as well, because, you know, the reward at the end of that Six Nations is a ticket on the plane to New Zealand, and, you know, what could be hopefully an incredibly memorable tour for a number of reasons. One, the amount of fans that are protected to go there, you know, playing against the world champions in their backyard. And I think we're all pretty excited about the potential of the squad. Not just the starting 15, but the biggest strength that the All Blacks have is a bench and the impact of a bench. And sometimes the Celtic Nation, that can be the Achilles heel, you know, just sometimes having a real quality come off the bench. And you look at the Lions and go, phew. I don't think enough was made of that winning that third test in Australia in 2013. You know, I thought it was, you know, a real impact from the bench coming on, a real impetus and momentum that the bench caused in 2013. And, you know, you were just back earlier about Conor Murray, and you see a player like that develop. You know, he went from sort of going to his number three probably in 2013 to, you know, if he had another test, a fourth test the following week, he would have started it, you know, as in 2013. So, yeah, you love to see the development of players like that. But, I don't know whether you can tell, I'm sort of pretty, you know, much looking forward to getting on the plane and, you know, what should be a really special tour.
That was the Lions head coach, Warren Gatland. Well, Mick Cleary is the rugby writer of the Telegraph newspaper, and he shared his Lions thoughts at yesterday's announcement.
It's been well signalled. And I guess the only kind of kink that could have been there would have been Gregor Townsend, you know, who's not taken up an offer that was made, which I find, not from Gregor's point of view, slightly strange in that Eddie Jones is not there, Joe Schmidt is not there, Gregor Townsend's not there. The Lions is the best of the best. The home unions own the Lions. You know, they run it. They employ Eddie Jones, Joe Schmidt, Gregor Townsend. Quite why that whip isn't cracked in that particular way. It's a sort of minor kind of consideration. These are good guys they've got, you know, but I mean, it's a question of maximising what you might want. And of course, you know, the Warren Gatland, Eddie Jones, Joe Schmidt mix may not work because they're all too many chiefs and all that sort of stuff. So, that was my only... I'd have liked to see Gregor there, I think. You know, because I think he's a Lion himself, knows how it works, what the ethos is. Rob Halley does obviously as well. You know, this will be his fifth trip, but I'd like to just see that little point of difference as well. I know continuity has its significant merits as well, but they are going to add to it. But I think in future it'll just be in terms of a specialist kind of skills coach, scrum coach, maybe whatever down the line.
The thought struck me listening to Warren Gatland inside talking about, you know, the fact that the way the Lions works is a game at the weekend, a game midweek. You could have maybe two or three different training sessions every day, but certainly it's kind of lacking that senior coaching experience, if you understand what I mean. Given if you have a week, you know, the weekend team are training Monday morning, what about the midweek team in the afternoon? It's going to put a lot of pressure on the coaching staff.
It does. I was just chatting to Stuart Lancaster, in fact, this week, and... on that self-same point, and he was said, even on the England tour to New Zealand in 2014, they had a Tuesday night game against the Crusaders. And he said he found it so incredibly difficult to come on the back of a test match on the Sunday morning. He's got to think about preparing a side for Tuesday night when he's got all the other ramifications from the night before and the preparation for the Saturday. It was the first time he'd done it in that kind of context. He said it was really, really challenging. Obviously, Warren's been through that. Rob Howley's been through that. So they do know what it takes. They do. So the planning ahead is key in that. And, you know, the Lions is so different, which is kind of what players love about it. It's so different because it's difficult, you know. And that, what you've just said, is to go from, for the coaches, to go from one training session, one match to another, straight into a different kind of context with different players. They have to be prepared. So there's a lot of late nights there. And you will need an extra body or two. There's no question. You've only to blow a whistle, you know, to conduct that session properly.
When you look at, you know, two other people who are there, Andy Farrellin and Steve Borthwick. Andy Farrellin obviously involved with Ireland, Steve Borthwick at England. They're two younger coaches who are involved with teams who certainly know how to win.
Yeah, well, Andy's won... coached the team there twice that's beaten New Zealand, you know, with 2012 with England and Ireland in Chicago. So, and he's a big figure in all senses, and he's absolutely key. He's the guy that the players sort of relate to as well. You know, he's not that old, so he's got that sort of connection, and he's got that reputation of from his rugby league days as a player more than his union days, which were a little bit truncated through injury at the tail end of his career. And he's got that kind of toughness, that spirit, that confidence, that cockiness, if you like, or whatever it takes to say, right, lads, we're going to win this. And when you've got those two scalps to sort of dangle before the players as well, they know that what he's talking about is actually makes sense and can come true. So he was the motivator, I think, in chief, as well as obviously a very good technical defence coach. And Steve Borthwick is the technical coach in terms of the forward pack. You know, his if you like, his impact with players comes from his preparation. There's probably nobody in world rugby is better prepared than Steve Borthwick. You know, he's a night, noon and everything else man, really, in terms of dissecting and analysing and projecting onto players. So he's had a great 12 months, hasn't he, coming from Eddie Jones's assistant with Japan to that great win over South Africa through a perfect year. So, you know, they've got good guys there, that's for sure.
And go back one, was he not involved with Bristol?
Yes, briefly. Briefly, he got out quickly. Yeah, he was. So he'll be good. And Rob Howley, listen, Rob, you know, Wales' actual statistical record in the autumn was the best in 14 years, I think, or something. But he was definitely under pressure. You know, there's definitely a bit of unrest there, you know. So it's a big Six Nations for Rob. You know, as it would be as a head coach, you know, taking your team through. But it's not a credibility issue. But you want to come in with a spring in your step to a coaching environment, the same as a player will want to come through as well, you know. So Rob will be looking for those feel-good vibes through the championship.
So let's summarise. Like, we know who the head coach is. We know who the majority of the rest of the coaching staff are going to be. But from a player's point of view, the next 4 months are absolutely huge, aren't they?
Fantastic. And of course, you know, they'll all say we can't afford to think about it because, as we spoke earlier, you know, they've got huge European games within 2 days' time, you know, and then another round of it after that, and then holiday fixture lists, and then into more Europe, you know. So, but of course, every single one of them wants to be on that Lions tour next year. It's a great trip. And what has happened brilliantly and thankfully is that, you know, 2005 was a disaster really in New Zealand in all sorts of ways. Maybe it had to be tried once, that massive squad and two groups and all that kind of thing, to realise actually that isn't how it works, you know. So they want it. They want that sense of togetherness that comes from a Lions, you know, rooming, playing, knocking lumps out of your mate in training that was your rival before and then putting an arm around his shoulder. So, you know, that's what they want. And the November was very, very upbeat and encouraging for the home union. So let's hope that carries through in 2017.
European rugby returns this weekend with all four Irish teams involved in action. A total of 109 tries have been scored in the opening two rounds of the competition at an average of 5.7 per game. Northampton Saints reach a milestone when they take on Leinster at Franklin's Gardens. It marks their 100th appearance in Europe's top flight. They're also the 10th club to reach a tournament century. Devon Toller makes his 50th European appearance for Leinster. Joey Carberry is named at out half with returns for Robbie Henshaw and Sean O'Brien.
Can't wait for the game now. Got a good week under my belt of a little bit of rehab and, you know, got the little niggle that was at me away. And, feeling great this week. Been a good week of prep.
A frustrating time, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a little bit frustrating because, you know, I was kind of playing well in that All Blacks game and really looking forward to Australia game, and just picked up a small niggle that, you know, couldn't risk playing. So, you know, I was pulled from that, so that was a bit frustrating. But I suppose on the following Tuesday, that niggle had gone, you know. It was only a couple of days of a thing, and, you know, I had a good week of training here last week in Leinster, and I got a bit of a jump start on the lads that were off, and, you know, had a good week of prep this week.
So I guess what you're looking forward to is a run of games, or, you know, something approaching that.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to, you know, I've said this before, I want to play every week, and I want to keep that, you know, to get that bit of consistency. And I think, you know, that'll get me a little bit battle hardened, and I'm picking up little bits and pieces along the way, hopefully. And, you know, I feel great. I'm in the best shape I've ever been in. So, you know, that's all I want to do now, is just keep playing.
I mean, even Leinster first, if you understand what I mean, it's hard enough to get into the team.
Yeah, that's another thing why you want to keep playing. You know, there's so many guys coming through now and so much talent in the younger crew. You know, you want to be, you know, if you're not involved, you know, there's someone there filling your spot. And so, yeah, that's another important part of it. But, you know, that's a good thing as well for the club, having that strength and depth and having so many good young lads coming through and, you know, can do a job. So, you know, that's what we're looking for as a club. But, you know, that's why you want to be on the field all the time as well and not give them a sniff at it.
So it's off to Franklin's Gardens for the first of a sort of the two back-to-back encounters, if you understand. You know, any time you travel to somebody's back garden, that's always where they try to perform best, and that'll be no exception, I guess, Northampton, even though the league form isn't the brightest this year.
Yeah, but, you know, if you put yourself in their shoes, they'll definitely be coming, going home this week at home. Yeah, they've had a mixed bag this year, but at the same time, in European rugby, I think we all know anything can happen. And, you know, Franklin's Gardens is a very hard place to go, and we'll be looking to put in a big, big performance over there.
It's one of those atmospheric stadiums, isn't it? I mean, the crowd really kind of get involved with the team and vice versa.
Yeah, as I said, tough place to go. The crowd really gets behind their team over there. Played there once before only, I think. Twice, actually. And, you know, it's an incredible atmosphere when there's a good game of rugby on there. So hopefully we can quieten their crowd a little bit and have any of our supporters, you know, making lots of noise.
There's no doubt that Leinster will approach this match with a lot of confidence. Obviously, those who've been on international duty will come back full of the joys of life, but, you know, in the meantime, everybody else who hasn't been involved international wise has been keeping the flag flying as well.
Yeah, they've done very well. You know, they had a little slip up against the Scarlets, but hung in there well to get a try bonus. And then last week, you know, it played very well with a very young team out. So they've done pretty well while the lads have been away. And you know, there's a good few of them still involved in this match day squad, so you know, they've deserved to be there, and that's all. It's always a big time of year when the internationals are away that those other lads step up and perform, and they've done that.
Just two questions before we finish up. Joey Carberry starting at 10. You know, I mean, it's been an incredible season for him. I mean, what kind of a bloke is he? You know, how different is he to say Johnny Sexton?
Yeah, Joey's a great fella. You know, he is obviously they're two different people and two different types of players, but, you know, Joey has a good bit of confidence, you know, over the last, he's gotten a lot of confidence over the last while in those big games that he's been involved in, and he's been directing us around very well, and he's a lot of very, very good attributes, and I suppose they'll only grow and get stronger over the next few big games, and very, very exciting player, and a really nice guy as well, you know, another club man down in Athy, so have to give them a mention.
And finally, the whole switch from 7 to 6, you know, obviously you're adaptable, you can play any of the three positions, but is there a different mindset, or what's different about each position?
There's not a whole different mindset, but obviously my role in D and in attack is a little bit different, because at 7, you know, you're tied up in a lot of stuff, so hopefully I'll have a little bit of a freer look around the place tomorrow night, so looking forward to it, you know. So we've trained well there all week, me and Josh, so it doesn't really matter, you know, either side of the scrum, we're happy enough, I think.
Leicester Tigers are the only side to have registered two tournament victories in Thomond Park, 13-6 in 2007 and 31-19 last season. No wonder the venue is a sellout for this weekend's game. It's the seventh meeting between the sides. Leicester have won 4 of the last 6, including the last 3 in a row. Munster, however, are one of only 2 teams not to have conceded a try in the first 60 minutes of a European game this season. Scrum half Conor Murray is hoping the recent good run, which has seen the province top the Pro 12 and their pool, can continue.
Probably be careful not to get carried away with ourselves. You know, we were in a few tight games recently with Munster, and, you know, they're probably games that we might have lost last year, and they can be decided on little moments here or there, but we're just coming out on the right side of those moments at the moment, and, you know, it's good momentum to have coming into a really busy period with Europe for 2 weeks and then a few interpros and then back into Europe again. So coming into a really busy and important period for our season, and the lads are in good spirits. You know, it's great to come back into a camp like this that are buzzing, that are winning, you know, and it makes things more enjoyable and easier to kind of come back in and get used to.
Would you say that people are in a kind of a mentally stronger position? I mean, you mentioned the fact that maybe we mightn't have won some of those matches, even say like the Glasgow game last Friday night.
Yeah, I think it's mentally, it's massive, massive part of rugby, massive part of sport. So I think the lads are going really well, and they are. I think there's just belief there. I think there's a really good amount of belief and confidence there that we can go and win games, we can go and beat anyone, and I think that shows on the pitch. You know, we did make it difficult for ourselves in Glasgow, but the lads just stuck to their guns, stuck to what we know, and just backed ourselves and eventually got up the pitch and got that draft goal from Keith, which was brilliant, so and got us over the line. So yeah, there's good belief there. I think mentally we're definitely a lot stronger than we were last year.
and you feel a bit refreshed? I mean, there, you know, there were some people who were involved, obviously, internationally during the course of the last number of weeks, but weren't involved last weekend.
Yeah, like I said, it was good to get a weekend off, and you know, the lads didn't need any of us over in Glasgow, which was great. And yeah, you just mentally get a little break from rugby. You know, it was an intense period over November. Thankfully, the body's feeling really, really fresh, and it was more so a mental break, and you know, switch away from that part of rugby, and switch back into this now, which is really busy. Like I said, 8 weeks on the bounce, with a lot of important games coming up, and feeling fresh.
When you look at the opposition this weekend, Leicester Tigers, I mean, they're a team who know and have known for a number of years how to kind of switch on the switch when it comes to European rugby.
Yeah, a lot of history with Leicester throughout the years, and last year was really disappointing, particularly at home. At home when we played them last year, we didn't fire a shot, and it was quite disappointing. And in the away fixture, we actually played a lot better, and nearly came away with a win. So we know we can mix it with them, and I know we're in a better place than we were last year, and they're playing really well. I think they've had three wins on the bounce, and look really strong with a lot of experience and internationals coming back into their side. So it's going to be a great game. I think we've quite similar styles as teams, so it's going to be a very interesting battle. I mean, it's going to be a massive battle. It'd be great to get off on a good start in Thomond with a sold out crowd, hopefully.
And you talk about quite interesting spectators as well. I know you can't control that, but you know, the Munster fans are passionate, so too are the Leicester fans.
Yeah, huge. And last year was no different. It was a great game at home. We probably didn't give our crowd enough to shout about last year, which is something we want to do this weekend, you know, and make it a real proper European game in Thomond Park. And same when you went away to Leicester, their crowd, like you say, if we play quite similarly, the crowds are quite similar as well. They're very vocal, they're very knowledgeable, and you know, they give it to you when you're on the pitch. So it's exciting 2 weeks. It's going to be enjoyable, you know, but it's important. There's pressure on, and they're really important games. But these are the games you want to play rugby for.
I know that people are very conscious of the past and Munster's history in the past, Leicester's history in the past as well, in terms of this competition. But how important is it for the group of players that are here now to take lessons from the past, but write their own future, if you understand?
Yeah, I think writing your own script is really important. But yeah, these games are really important. These are games that we haven't been tested in yet this season. You know, things have gone well and we've had a few big wins, and the team is confident and fellas are feeling good, but these next few weeks are going to tell a lot about our squad. And yeah, it's about writing your own bit of history or your own story now, and I think everyone's aware of that. And I think as a group we have the confidence to be able to go and try and do that. I'm not saying we're definitely going to win all these games or whatever, but we definitely are in a better position, and we're our own team right now. I think we just have this individualness about our squad. It's great, and we play the way we want to play, and that's true Razzie, true Felix, true Jack. You know, it's just the way we want to play, and they're really backing us, which is great. It's enjoyable.
You'll see yourself, a final question, as one of the kind of the senior members of the squad now, but I mean, if you look at who's available for this weekend, it's a rather difficult team to pick.
Yeah, exactly. Like I mentioned a minute ago, this time of year, you know, it's great to have almost a full deck of cards to choose from. No one knows the starting 15. We won't know for a couple of days, and you know, training later on today is going to be really interesting. You know, it's a European week. Everyone wants to play the European games, you know, and training will be a bit for you, which is exactly what you need, because you've got to build that intensity for the weekend.
That's Conor Murray. Well, Ulster host Claremont Auvergne in the early game on Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock. It's the third meeting of the sides. Both matches have been won by the home team on the day. On Sunday, Connacht travel to play Wasps. Both teams are unbeaten so far in Europe this season. Wasps have won the last three at home in the competition and have never lost to an Irish side at home. I've been chatting to Mick Cleary about those Anglo-Irish encounters, beginning with Northampton and Leinster. Northampton's preparations overshadowed somewhat by the controversy surrounding George North and his fitness.
Yeah, the George North affair really is worrying, terribly worrying for him. And it doesn't seem to me from the outside that they've handled it very well at all, you know. So I think there's a kind of credibility in communications there, as well as worrying medical issues for the player. You know, that's the fourth time certainly that he's had a bad knock. It was seemingly a bad knock. They said he wasn't knocked out, etc., etc. But if concussion is the big thing, isn't it? In the big worry in rugby. And you know, in here we are at the Lions gathering in a Lions year. You know, you do worry for the player.
You would hope also that there is going to be no continuation of sort of finger pointing and people not taking responsibility and trying to hope that something goes away, because player welfare has to be paramount.
I really don't understand, and as I said, Michael, I wasn't there. I was obviously on England duty the weekend, and I didn't cover the story yesterday, but I was aware of it and looked into it. I did make a couple of calls about it, and it seemed to me, not seemed to me, I was told specifically yesterday that all the kind of enhanced protocols and everything they've got in now, the HIA, the head injury assessment, all those kind of things are actually kind of secondary to the primary thing, which they have emphasised from World Rugby downwards, is that, you know, any concern you're removed. You know, recognise and remove, I think, is the phrase they say. Mm. So if a guy, particularly a guy who's got a history with it, you know, you even a layman, and I know it's easy to be a know-all layman, you know, but you would have just said, hang on, that guy's had issues. He's banged up at least. Let's, you know, have him off. And then the head injury assessment also isn't to test whether he's concussed. It's to test whether he needs to be removed from the fray. You know, you can't medically assess concussion in 10 minutes. You know, obviously you can say a guy's clear and everything else. But so there we are. It's yeah, I hope there is a thorough process. Again, checking out yesterday from World Rugby downwards and Premier Rugby as well. Every head incident, whether it's noted at the time or an incident at the time in the match, there's a guy who actually, there's somebody is sitting up with an iPad assessing and noticing every contact with the head. So even if it's not, a player doesn't even notice it in the game, this guy up in the stand in every Premiership match that now plays has a report to file, you know. So I would say that the whole scrutiny and the whole procedure and processes around head injuries now is far, far, far better than it was 3 or 4 years ago, and has had to be. But of course, it can still get better, because you can see an incident like this, there's obviously something not quite right, and that certainly needs to be rectified.
In terms of the game on Friday night in Franklin's Gardens, let's talk about that. You know, again, from me, from the outside looking in, looking at the league table, I see where Northampton are. They just appear to be in a place that they're not used to at this moment in time.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see, really, because as with Leinster, you know, there are international players coming back into both those sides, really charged up and buoyed up, possibly shattered as well, by the November kind of test series. So there'll be guys there with confidence from Hartley. Courtney Laws was back to his best, I think. We haven't seen the best of Courtney for 2 or 3 years. You know, he was terrific, you know. So there's plenty of kind of good input coming into that Northampton side, because the last I saw of them was actually down in Castres when they were in the last round of European, when they were dreadful, absolutely dreadful. Whatever the final score was, it was certainly 40 and it could have been 60. They were awful. So they've got a lot of ground to make up. They've lost a couple of home games at Franklin's Gardens, which is a fantastic ground, really kind of good support base there. It'll be full, you know, and with Leinster in town as well, there'll be a lot of Irish support there. So it'll be a great occasion. And Northampton, after that Castres reverse, the manner of that Castres reverse, really have got to deliver something on Friday night.
In terms of Leinster, however, I mean, maybe if you're from a Northampton point of view, you look at the team who's coming to play you, and maybe any team but Leinster, given the, you know, the quality that they have available to them.
But they've also a great European history between the sides, wasn't there? That fantastic final down in Cardiff and whenever it was, 2011 was it, when the fantastic lead clawed back by Leinster. Yeah, so I think actually it's sometimes easy to get yourself right back up, you know, for the big teams coming, and you know, if you don't perform, you know, that's it. And in fact, if they don't perform, their Europe is all over, I would imagine, you know. So and there's a, you know, there's a good English input to that Leinster side this year with Stuart Lancaster. He'll know those Northampton international players very, very well indeed. So it promises to be really intriguing. I slightly feel for the players, you know, they've come off, particularly the England players. Ireland players have had a week, although England, the RFU chose to have a game outside the test window. But, you know, they've come off the back of that. You've got no time to draw breath, have you? You're playing a Friday match. You know, Dylan Hartley's gone from the high of Saturday and the unbeaten year and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he's right back in the mix. But those guys are used to it. And possibly they may relish the fact that, wow, this is actually the same level I was at last week. You know, I've got to be at that level, otherwise we're done for.
In terms of the game that's on Saturday at Thomond Park, Munster against Leicester, again, two clubs with a huge pedigree in this competition. And if there is a team that knows how to flick a switch and get up to Europe pretty quickly, and also to win in Thomond Park, it is Leicester Tigers.
Yeah, it is. Well, they took that great record off them, didn't they, about a decade ago now? I think it was 2006-07 season, wasn't it, when they first to win a European tie at Thomond since Munster had come into it, I think. You know, so they got that, and then again won again there last year. So Leicester themselves have been a bit kind of little bit up and down, but they are fighters and scrappers. Tui Lange, fingers crossed for him, really, never mind who they're playing against. He's had such a wretched kind of couple of years with injury that you want to see good players out there, really, just for their own sake. So I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't start. You know, he's had three games, I think, now off the bench. Ben Youngs has come back, who's been in cracking form, and Connor Murray, got it there in the end. It will be a great battle at scrum half in the Lions context as well. You know, two scrum halves right at the top of the game, and I know they're dependent on the forwards doing their stuff, you know. So that'll be a great tie, I think.
From a Munster viewpoint, they're certainly on a crest of a wave, but they're in a pretty decent position at this moment in time.
Well, you know, they've had the most turbulent, horrible season for the obvious reasons of Anthony Foley's passing away, you know, and since then have kind of seemed charged and supercharged and energised by it all, you know, and or whether that's just the coming together under Razzie Erasmus this season, that was just a natural prime. Who knows, really, but that they've only played one and had that, you know, again, very emotional kind of Saturday game against Glasgow post it all, really. So they are played 1-1-1, so, you know, they're looking good in that sense. They're only one game in, but I mean, it's but Leicester will be, you know, it's going to be sold out term. And Leicester have, as I said, I think they haven't really delivered in Europe for a while, a bit like Munster, you know. So they know, you know, in a group as tough as that as well with Glasgow, that you've got to pick up points on the road. I mean, that's key, and therefore the flip is for Munster. They've got to win at home, haven't they?
They certainly do. Now, all of the chat at this side of the world for the last couple of days has been about Pat Lam and Connacht, and, you know, his leaving to go to Bristol at the end of the season. But it's going to be interesting to see how the Connacht players react when they play Wasps on Sunday.
Yes, it will be. You know, they'll either be, they'll go one or two ways, really, be up or down, won't it? You know, they'll either be a kind of, gee, we'll it's obviously a shock to them, I think. We'll send Pat on his way and show what we really are made of. We'll show that we can do it without him there, even if he is there, you know, that we've got there. But they're coming up against one of the form teams in Wasps, you know. Again, we'll have all their international players back, you know. So I would, that's a hell of a task for them at the Rico on Sunday, I think. I'd expect Wasps to win that just because of their own pedigree and their own home form.
Some interesting games there over the course of the weekend. You can catch Northampton and Leinster on Game On 2FM from 7 o'clock on Friday. Wasps and Connacht is an RTE Radio 1 Extra from 1 o'clock on Sunday. From myself, Michael Corcoran, and producer Andrew O'Connor, thanks for listening, and catch us again next week.